I've been a Hawksoft user for 15 years. It's all about ease of use, access to information, and price. I bought an agency a few years back that had one of the competitors and two users. I added those two users to my account, and the new price with Hawksoft was still one-fourth of the price with that other company. I don't know why anybody else would do anything but Hawksoft. You've got a KPI dashboard that works great, and everything just top-notch. They have a great users group that gives you a lot of information, and you can pick up a mentor for using Hawksoft, or just, hey, a mentor for business too through the users group. So I'm Rodney Cook, Cook Insurance Group, and you should use Hawksoft because it's the best one out there.
Hey guys, it's Bradley. I want to tell you about Ascend. Ascend is not just another premium finance company. Ascend will solve all of your agency bill problems through automation of invoicing, premium financing, carrier payables, all the way to the end of the workflow. There's a lot of hidden costs with how you're doing business today. AMSs, CRMs can spend more than half the day chasing down payments, following up on non-pays, getting signatures for financing docs. This leads to an overworked, overwhelmed, unhappy team. And guys, you want your team to be happy. Industry's hard enough as it is. We really need them to be happy. As your agency grows, this issue gets worse and worse. And we typically solve the problem with a little bit of software, but a ton of manpower is still involved. With Ascend, you can use a software-first solution and just need a little bit of manpower, allowing you to grow without significant increase in overhead. Ascend automates all of these repetitive payment processes so your team can get back to helping your clients. With Ascend, we've seen non-payment cancellations in our agency go down up to 95%. Teams save more than 20 hours per month when they work with Ascend, and an average of a 75% decrease in payment-related customer questions. Guys, if people aren't calling your office with questions, you have more time to sell and grow your agency. Visit useascend.com/insurance, guys. Guys, Ascend makes agency bill as easy as direct bill, but you keep all of the benefits of agency bill, the best of both worlds. Thanks, guys.
Insurance agents from around the world, welcome to the Insurance Guys Podcast.
Powered by Hawksoft.
My name is Scott Howell, your fearless host and leader, insurance agency owner and insurance evangelist for iProtect Insurance and Financial Services, based out of Huntsville, Alabama. And before we get started on today's episode, please help me welcome. He is a 6'3" sophomore from Mobile, Alabama. Parade first team All-American, Rivals five-star recruit. He is a fantastic insurance agent and a great American. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and welcome the incomparable Mr. Bradley Flowers. How are you, Bradley?
I'm great, man. How are you today?
Best I've ever been. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm in Mobile, Alabama, and for the last 2 years, I've been asking Bradley, what's going on in Mobile? Seems kind of crazy out here. Well, that culminated. We went ahead and reached our zenith last night with me hearing and then seeing a guy get shot about 75 yards from my hotel room. And man, that was a wild, wild night last night, Bradley.
The worst sign is that it did not make the news. That's not a good sign.
Well, there's actually one worse than that. So with all the school shootings and all the things going on, I've got on noise canceling headphones in my room and I hear three shots ring out. Boom, boom, boom. When I get up to go see what, you know, if I could see what was going on, which I definitely could because I videoed all of it. Bradley, these son of guns down here, here's the worst part. These kids down here, they don't even check up. You know, when you see somebody shooting in a crowd, you saw the Orlando hysteria at the mall, you see, you know, there's been so many
Kansas
shootings.
City.
Yeah, you see people shooting, you see these people just running for their lives. Dude might as well have thrown three rocks. These kids didn't even check up. And that tells me they are used to this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a, you know, random. This is just an everyday thing.
You probably should take those videos you shot and send them to the police.
Nah, they don't want me. They trust me. I'll tell you what happened. I know exactly what happened. Somebody made the block because everything down here is a one-way street. Mm-hmm. They turned left on Dolphin, and they didn't shoot him in the chest. They shot him in the back out of their car, and then they took off because they were, you know, Dolphin Street goes south to north one way.
and he was walking away from that place they were all partying at, and he just, whoever was in the car, they just slowly drove by and popped him three times in the back. And it was kind of sad to watch, because I was sitting there watching this kid bleed out, you know, while on video and him bleeding out. And, you know, cop pulls up, puts his gloves on to go over there and work on him for a minute. And then about 5 minutes later, when the EMTs show up, they hustle out the gurney, but there was no CPR or anything. They just kind of, three or four of those cops just snatched him up and literally pitched him on a gurney.
Well, those of you listening to this on the way to work, I apologize for making your day super depressing.
Oh, no. Hey, man, it happens. Sometimes the things like that happen. Being in the Marine Corps,
you're sort of desensitized.
I'm kind of like those kids out there. I'm like, well, somebody just got shot. I think most people would have probably been horrified.
I would have
by
been.
That, yeah. You know, but man, it happens. It's unfortunate, but I am proud to be down here today.
We probably need to get you another hotel.
I've got so many things, so many stories to talk about today. I hate to have to lead off with that one, but you know, when somebody gets shot outside your hotel and
you kind of have to talk about it.
Kind of have to talk about it the next day, you know, it's like, but no, I'm proud. I'm still proud to be down. I love Mobile. Somebody was asking me over the weekend, I think it was my dad. He came to my son's baseball game Saturday, and I said something about coming down to Mobile yesterday. And he goes, "You like Mobile? What do you think about Mobile?" I said, "Man, Mobile's a great place." I said, "It's very eclectic." I've always affectionately called Mobile Baby New Orleans, because it has kind of that New Orleans feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very historic city. I think in the context of the history of the United States, there's so much history. I hope that doesn't get lost one day.
We're now the second largest city in Alabama next to Huntsville.
Did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Lot more history than I think most people know about, and there's historic markers all over this place. You know what's funny?
This building is a historic building that we're sitting in.
Did not know that. Yeah. So one thing, if you guys ever get a chance to travel over in Europe, especially around Germany, Vienna, you know, they've whitewashed their history.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Vienna, Austria, in world history terms, back to World War II and the German SS and all that, that was ground zero for the German SS.
Yeah.
Because what most people don't know, Hitler was not from Germany.
He's from Austria.
He's from Vienna, Austria.
Yeah.
And so you go over there now, which I was over there in 2018, 19. Dude, not one plaque, not one.
That might be on purpose.
Not one Hitler lived here. I mean, nothing to do with any of that. So they've whitewashed their history. But anyway, guys, we've got an all-star guest on today. I consider him a friend of mine. Think about this time last year, I was down in Round Rock, Texas, 14 days after having my left hip replaced, and I finally ran into him face-to-face and got to hug his neck. But I love seeing him on Twitter, and he has a wealth of knowledge in the insurance industry. You know, before we came on this podcast today, Bradley, we're talking about all these young bucks on Twitter going to set us all right. Yeah. You know, They're gonna tell us what's up about the insurance industry, which is borderline comical that a 22-year-old's gonna tell me what's up on about insurance. Okay. Get back in the kiddie pool. When you're ready, come see me. But you better wait about 15 years, because you got a lot of catching up to do.
You're just a dinosaur, Scott.
I often get
extinct.
But I love it. I love it, because we have like this band of brothers on Twitter. When somebody comes after us, we're like, hell no, we're about to damn jump his ass right now. You know, and it's the group we're talking about. If y'all want to get into it, we can. But it's been borderline comical to see some of the stuff they post. I'm like, guys.
Anytime I open Twitter, even if there's not something going on, and I see like the little 10 plus notifications,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, we're about to get into some shit today.
Scott, mount up. Here we go.
I need you on Twitter, Scott.
I need you on Twitter. Twitter alert.
My favorite thing, though, so you're not online much.
Not at all. No.
And I think you have like spotty internet at your house.
No, it's just I get real, real busy, and then like it'll maybe be like a Saturday morning, and I've got 20 minutes to myself, and I'll just explode.
So Scott will do these Twitter bursts.
Yeah. It's like,
and he's on Twitter for 20. It's like 15 tweets. They're all hilarious and or insightful. Sometimes both. and
then I'm gone.
And it's like a it's like Zorro.
You're like Frosty the Snowman. Like
your Twitter Zorro. You're only there for a little bit. You leave your mark. It's great, and you're gone. You don't see any of it for like a week.
No, exactly.
And it's great. And me and Carruthers messaged me one day directly, and he was like, "Man, I love how Scott just appears out of nowhere on Twitter, and then he's gone."
And by the way, if anybody's listening to this and wants to like write me a mean message on Twitter or send me a message, I'm probably not going to see it for 7 or 8 days. So you're going to be the one thinking about it.
Do you even know how to get into your Twitter DMs?
Dude.
Probably not.
No, I do. I get a notification. Okay. Here's the thing. You know, all these social media platforms have these mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like general mailbox, primary.
Yeah.
Dude, I will see messages like 4-paragraph, heartfelt. I can't tell you enough what your podcast means to me, and you're the reason I'm still in the insurance industry, from June of 2022.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, this poor bastard just sent me this like 2 years ago, and all the time.
I think it was some famous person. I think it was T-Pain, and he discovered that there was a primary and a general inbox on Instagram, and he clicked the general inbox.
Just figured that out about a month ago.
And there was messages from like Drake and Rihanna, like, I want to collaborate, from like 4 years ago.
From 2019.
His career wasn't doing great.
Hey, man, I'm playing the Super Bowl in 6 months, and I really want you to be on stage with me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, can you imagine? The biggest missed opportunity.
Guys, I got an all-star guest. I got to bring him on because he needs to be in this conversation. And I'm so happy to have him on the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, he is originally from Kankakee, Illinois. And I know I just screwed that up. That's okay. And he currently resides in Naperville, Illinois. He is married to the beautiful Whitney. And they have 2 beautiful babies. Not babies anymore, but they're old enough to hear this podcast today. I want to give a shout out to Nick and Drew, both in the 8th grade. Nick, Drew, listen to Uncle Scott, okay? I want you to listen to Uncle Scott. You boys are old enough to listen to this podcast, and I want you to do me a big favor. I want you to go up to your daddy, and I want you to hug his neck and tell him how much you love him and how proud you are of him, of what he's achieved in his life. He has a resume of success that you both should be very proud of. And it would mean more to him for you to walk up to him and do that than anything you could ever give him. So do Uncle Scott a favor and go do that. Go hug your daddy's neck and tell him you love him and you're proud of him. And I would really appreciate it if you two would do that for me, because I know you're going to hear this podcast. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois in Chicago with a degree in economics. And his list of insurance jobs, roles, and companies, pretty impressive, Bradley. Northwestern Mutual Financial Advisor in 2004, 2012, State Farm Insurance Agent, 2014, founder of HedgeQuote. And then in 2019, he partners as the general manager for my brother from another mother, Mr. Seth Zaremba at B Atomic. Today, he is currently championing Neon Shopping Alerts, which monitors insurance shopping websites and notifies participating agencies when one of their customers is online and shopping with a competitor. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my profound honor today to introduce you to my friend and great American, Mr. Pat West. How are you, Pat?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on. You mentioned the Chicago thing, and it got me thinking about college. I haven't thought about college in a while, but when I drive to school in the morning, we'd listen to our version of Howard Stern, Mancow Muller. And people maybe know that name, but people would call in and they'd say, "Hey, Mancow, love you, love your show. I'm a first-time caller," and they'd hop into it. And maybe I'll start that way. Just love you guys, love your show, and honored to be here. Bradley sat down with me probably almost 4 years ago and supported me when I was getting into content and getting into networking and things like that. And so super appreciative of your friendship and just, again, honored to be on the show. I can't wait to see what we dive into. I'm excited.
Well, Pat, before we go any further, let's talk a little bit. I want you to get in my DeLorean with me. And we've got so much to talk about today. You know, our mission on this podcast for the last 7 or 8 years has never changed. It's always been, and I was having a conversation on my way down with Mobile yesterday with somebody, this wanting to get into podcasting and wanting to get into all this, not an insurance, something completely different.
Thank God.
And I said, you know, I was giving him some tips and tricks, and I said, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of, and the reason Bradley and I started this podcast was throughout history, and this isn't a knock on them. There's still a lot of people in the industry this way, but not nearly what it was when I think we started back in the mid-2000s, early 2000s. We still had a lot of old heads that they weren't going to tell you what they were doing to be successful. You still have to figure it out on your own. And I told him yesterday, I said, I'll tell you this, man. The thing I'm most proud of in my life is, in some small way, I feel like Bradley and I championed and started, spearheaded the drumbeat of, hey, how about we all help each other instead of, you know, these are my toys. Don't play with my toys. Don't tell nobody what you're doing. Just go get a phone book and start dialing people. And I'm very proud of that. And
well, what's interesting is when you share openly what makes you successful, other people are willing to share with you 100%. What it comes back to you.
It's a compounding effect.
Yeah,
it really is.
And the other thing is, like, you know, I was talking to one of my producers here the other day. There was a webinar that a tech company's doing that is in a niche that we are in.
Mm.
And I was like, hey, I think we need to participate in this. And the person was like, well, I think it might be a lot of stuff we're already doing. I was like, well, that's great, because when you listen to or talk to someone else that is, and what they describe as like a winning strategy is exactly what you're doing, it just confirms what you're doing.
Right.
So collaborating and sharing, you win either side. Either you come away super confident, like, hey, this is exactly what I'm doing is exactly what I need to be doing.
Sure.
Or B, you're like, oh, I learned this one thing that I can take and use. That's right. What happens when you share and you're willing to talk to other people and pour into them, is they can then pour into you, or then it comes back to you.
Correct. And I said all that, and I appreciate Bradley interjecting there to say this. Our mission is to help these insurance agents any way we can. We have never varied off that. We have never gone down any different road. And I only say that, Pat, because I want you to climb in my DeLorean for just a minute. And today, keep in the back of your mind, our mission is to help these insurance agents any way we can with any tips, tricks, thoughts, mistakes you've made in your time as an agent and in the more of that insure tech role, to keep them from walking right down the same road and going right off the cliff again. So get in my DeLorean and talk a little bit about how you started and bring us up to today.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned my economics degree at UIC. That's probably the easiest place to start. I played 2 years of college baseball, won a national championship, junior college national championship.
Hey, what position did you play?
I was a third baseman.
So my son plays third base for Huntsville High School, and they're okay. They've got 4 or 5 kids that have signed scholarships. Tomorrow they play Bob Jones at 4:00, and thank God I'm going to be podcasting with Bradley tomorrow. And the reason I say that is Saturday, 2 days ago, Bob Jones beat IMG Academy out of Florida, who is the number one team in the nation. And so we're probably going to get curb stomped Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But go ahead. Third base. Love it.
Yeah. So, I played 2 years of college baseball. Junior college level, won a national championship. And my body just kind of gave up on me.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up at UIC, actually. I took an intro to economics of the healthcare industry. And basically, it was just like looking for something that made sense. And essentially, it was like, wow, okay, I get that. My dad was a high school principal, and so he actually participated in, you know, multi-million-dollar benefits package negotiation, purchasing all of that stuff. So, you know, as the son of a fifth grade reading teacher and a high school principal, it was one of those connector points. You know, my father and I obviously talk about a lot of things, go on the boat together, all that, but it was one of those few business to business conversations we could have. And so basically went home, thought, okay, who do I know in the industry that does health insurance? I want to get into that. And I was like, you know what? I want to go into something, you know, deeper than maybe sales, but sales is the most obvious place to start if you want to learn about right. something. So fast forward the story a little bit. I had a friend whose father, stepfather owned a benefits company, and interviewed with him. And he actually sent me downstairs to Northwestern Mutual. You know, that's a good spot for you to kind of, I don't know, earn your keep or what. Yeah, I don't know exactly what he said. Yeah. Yeah, but he laughed a little bit. And now, you know, all these years later, I know why. You know, selling whole life insurance as a 20-year-old college student is certainly interesting. So that's where I started in the insurance industry.
Hey, by the way, great place to start, right? A lot of great training at Northwestern. I came this close. I don't know if you can see my two fingers right now, but I came this close to starting with Northwestern Mutual. And the one thing I'll say about them, tough road to hoe when you don't have any whiskers on your chin at 20 years old, right? But they do have some fantastic training. And I'll also say this. There's a couple of guys in Birmingham, Alabama, that held the rope with Northwestern Mutual that now have Oprah Winfrey money.
Yeah.
One of them got in with the NFL and is handling a lot of the money for NFL players from both Alabama, Auburn, kind of got in that world, you know, and is picking people up on private jets. And I think he's kind of selling it in a different way, more that, you know, way to invest through life insurance, you know, that kind of stuff. But there's been some folks make some big dog money with Northwestern Mutual. But boy, when to get there, that's a Gulf of Mexico to swim to get there. But if you can get on that other side, brother, you knock the bottom out of it.
I'm sure what you had 8 years of experience at Northwestern Mutual.
Oh God, no, I had 2 years, 2.5 years.
Yeah,
I'm sure when State Farm saw Northwestern Mutual experience, they were like, "Oh yeah, we're hiring this guy."
Boy, bring it on!
It was too easy. Yeah, it was too easy. And I would actually quickly say I don't remember the podcast, but it would have been early. I mean, I'm talking like early in your podcast. You had a life insurance agent on, and he walked through how to do a fact finder. I hate that I can't think of which one it was. If you're an agent listening to this and you don't hear anything else I tell you, go listen to that episode and incorporate that fact finder that agent does.
It was Van Miller. And coincidentally, we actually re-released that episode last week. So if you're listening to this, go back to last week's episode. But what's so funny about that is Van is a beast. I mean, I think he sold like that year we interviewed him, he sold like 800 life insurance policies.
Yeah.
And what he does is he goes out on the road, sells these policies, pulls into his office, doesn't even have time to get out of the car. They send a runner out to go out to his car, grab the applications, run back in to process them. But what's so funny, I don't think I've told the story. So when we got done with the podcast, he called me. And back then, I think the day that we recorded that, we released it that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me and he's like, "Hey, how do I listen to this thing we just recorded?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you got to think, this guy is so in his own world. He does not pay to sell that many policies. I mean, and to be that successful, you have to really only worry about what's going on in the 3-foot circle around you.
Absolutely.
And he said, "How do I listen to it?" And well, you know, with podcasts, at least, especially back then, now there's a million platforms to listen to podcasts on. Back then it was Apple or Android. And I said, "Well, do you have an iPhone or do you have an Android?" Because if he said Android, I was going to tell him to download Spotify. If he had Apple, the app's already on your phone. I said, "Do you have an iPhone or an Android?" And he says, "I don't know. Hang on 2 seconds. Let me look. It looks like an iPhone." Like, he's so in his own world that he did not know what type of phone he had.
Yeah. And I would tell you that learning. So you'll see me make jokes about the Northwestern internship. And that's because I'm on Twitter. I have a Twitter tone when I'm on Twitter. Go figure. So I have a lot of respect for that program. That program catapulted my insurance career. It showed me, you know, what was out there. But I would tell you that the Northwestern Mutual agents, they tell the best stories. I mean, they are the best storytellers in the world. I spent a week in LA with one of the top agents in the country, Keith Wagner. Keith Wagner had a bigger impact on my insurance career probably than just about anybody I've ever met. And I met him, you know, at 21 years old. So I would just say this, you know, I was a pace setter at Northwestern Mutual. So if you were there, like, "Hey guys, I've sold some policies." I'm not trying to brag. I was a pace setter there at 21 years old. So you mentioned cutting my teeth. I got the absolute crap kicked out of me all over the greater Chicagoland area. So rejection ate at me. I still am not able to truly filter that out. It's a burden, I suppose, I'm willing to carry to stay in the industry. So But yeah, I would tell you Northwestern Mutual is really where I kickstarted my career. The training was incredible. Jim, one of my first mentors down there, said, in times of stress, you'll revert to habit. And that's literally every day I wake up and I think about that comment, as crazy as that might sound. But that really catapulted me into my next job. I actually started a nonprofit fundraising platform with my brothers. I focused on product build out, things like that. Kept my insurance license. None of that's super relevant, except for to tell folks, like, I built a no-code fundraising website that's responsible for roughly $15 million in donations and going in 2007, right? So I, the technology and the insurance stuff has always been kind of that dual side of my career. I will tell you this. You guys know Shane Gillis, the comedian. Yes. Shane Gillis, right? Yeah. He tells one of the funnier West Point stories I've ever heard. Not that I have a lot of funny West Point stories, I guess, but he talks about how he's got a pretty interesting resume, right? He's technically a veteran.
Right.
He technically was on Saturday Night Live. He goes through all these things, right? But he says, like, I was at West Point for our day.
Right.
And I saw my mom and I'm like, I'm getting the hell out of here. Right. You know, like 12 hours in, he knew he was getting the hell out of there. So I will tell you, I did do State Farm Academy. I spent 12 months going back and forth to Bloomington, Illinois. Spent, you know, weeks, months inside of different insurance agencies. But I owned a State Farm insurance agency for 74 hours. And so that was really the turning point in, I would say, the business side of my career, when I decided I was going to open an insurance business. Going through that process, the tens of thousands of dollars that were spent on lawyers and accountants, and for that to not come through, I think was the first time I recognized, hey, this is where the independent channel, like, that was the first time I recognized, you know, it wasn't just, oh, that's a broker, right? It was, that's an independent agent. And so that those experiences, obviously the life insurance side of things, the investment side of things is where I've naturally spent time. But again, the years at State Farm, working at HedgeQuote, and tying back to what you mentioned earlier about, you know, that we all look out for each other, you know, and that we're trying to help each other. The first time I met or heard of either of you guys, I was actually looking for somebody to write an auto policy in Alabama for somebody that had come through HedgeQuote. And, right. And that's really where I started in this industry. I didn't look to be an agent. I wasn't looking to be a multi-state agent. I was looking to actually be a resource for online shoppers, for people that you knew were going to end up in some goofy direct-to-consumer play. I was like, why don't we skip the step of you making a mistake in your insurance planning? I'll introduce you to some agents that I know, respect, and love. And like I said, met you guys and met Seth. As crazy as this is, I had a lady in Chicago reached out to me. She wanted to insure some insane artistic doll collection. And so insuranceforartists.com is Seth Zaremba. And
right.
I mean, we've all met that guy. You know, it's something that I think anybody that's met him knows and loves him. So I won't dive into that story. But yeah, the last 3 and going on 4 years has just been really focused in on learning about agents. And trying to really work hard at Beatomic to deliver solutions that make sense. So you know, that's the DeLorean. A lot of insurance, a lot of technology.
I have to hear the 74-hour story.
Yeah, that's great.
And I say that because there's probably people, my gut is that you got in it and you're like, hey, this isn't for me. And there's maybe people listen to this in a similar situation.
Yeah, and so I know you know State Farm well, obviously. Yep. you've gone through that process in your household. And so, you know, the book assignment, you know, that, you know, there's taking over for an existing agent. There's a lot of legacy conversation, or not legacy playing, but like in the IA channel, taking over for a family member, right? Mm-hmm. There's actually a lot of similar perpetuation, right? There's a lot of similar things that happen at the State Farm level, but it's not a family member. It's not somebody that cares at all if you're going to be successful or not. And so, yeah, I got into it, went to sign my lease on an office, and he said, hey, here's what the rent's going to be. And he started saying, but I need 3 parking spots. There's 6 parking spots in the whole office. He needed 3 of them because the Metro train that goes downtown, the station was right by the office, right? So I'm in, I take my assignment, I'm ready to go. The assignment is minimal, but I'm like, I don't care. I'm a producer. Like, I'll get the job done. I get all the stuff. I take the rent. I take it over to my accountant for kind of the final look through. And my accountant goes, you're never going to make money. This office is incredibly expensive. He's like, you should buy your own at that price and invest in the property. So I went back to my manager. I went back to the agent I was taking over for. And I said, guys, here's the number I need to be at, and I'll wiggle. And they said, no. And I walked away. So it's as simple as that. And I would tell everybody and anybody in the insurance industry, it is an incredible career. Being an agent is something that I still crave. I still, you know, knowing how hard it can be, I still love that world. My wife and I invest in insurance agencies, you know, as we can. But you guys talk about it. Know it's in your contract. Know how you get paid. And you know what? I went, none of the other people I worked with had lawyers or accountants. And so I would tell anybody that may be in that situation, and don't be afraid to talk to financial professionals when you go through this. Don't end up at your accountant's office 8 months into your insurance career saying, I'm not making money, when that person could have told you that right off the bat. So that's why I went 74 hours in. I said, I don't have anywhere to park. It's me. I got four team members already hired. We don't even have enough parking spots. Mm-hmm. And this guy's charging me, no kidding, for a ranch house with two bedrooms. He's charging me out the eyeballs, right? And so I walked away, and it was tough. I mean, I had a lot invested in that, but that really led me to the IA channel. And I think, again, Northwestern training, State Farm training, things like that have really, they've set me up, right, to have empathy for what it takes to be an IA. And yeah, match that with my friends, my colleagues, the studying I do of the industry. And again, that's why I'm here.
Well, and I tell people too, you know, we have agents reach out to us. I mean, I've probably gotten this call five times a year for the last 6 years. Hey, I'm looking at going independent, but I also have the State Farm offer on the table. And, you know, there is more short-term money in the State Farm route and yada, yada. And I'm like, look, here's what I'll tell you. Generally speaking, if you are not the right fit for State Farm, they're probably going to know before you do.
Yeah.
They do so many personality assessments, and they have such a target of the type of person, personality, all that kind of stuff, that usually if it's not a good fit, you won't make it through the first 90 days, if not before that.
Hey, Pat, I promise I'm not trying to one-up you here. I hate people that one-up folks.
I'm not worried.
I made it in the State Farm Agency Owner Program. Hold on to your seat for 2 hours. 2 hours.
Impressive. I'm impressed. I think that you did well.
So here's what happened. Here's what happened. I went through all the stuff Bradley just mentioned, okay? The finish line before you go into the air quote State Farm agency owner pool, which means you're kind of in a holding pattern until they kind of figure out what agency they're going to offer you or what type of position or where and where they're going to offer you a potential office location. You go through all that stuff that Bradley just mentioned, and it culminates into, at least down here, and I'm probably sure they probably do this all over the country, your final day, you go before like four or five agents and you present your business plan. It feels like a 400 level college, like end of the year business thing that you're doing, right? To get a grade. Yeah. And so the day comes, I put my suit and tie on, I've got my business plan, I go into this big conference room with leather chairs and a mahogany desk, and there's these four stoic agents, just serious as a heart attack, sitting there.
I don't know that they do it like this anymore.
Well, they did then.
And they did it to me too.
Same thing. You remember this day?
I still drive by the building they do it at. And my wife's like, if you tell that story one more time about being in that building, I'm going to go crazy. So yeah, it impacts the rest of your life.
Yeah, it does. It's a very somber, stoic.
Sounds like the mafia.
You're like passing out your State Farm business plan to these people, and they're peppering you with questions about your business plan and all this other stuff. Well, I get out of there, finished up. I think, how long did it last? How long were you in there, Pat? Probably an hour.
2 hours.
Two hours
for me. Yeah.
And so I leave the mothership Lakeshore Boulevard office in Birmingham. Get in my little Honda Civic or Accord or whatever I was driving at the time.
Do you have like the real loud muffler that scared people?
No, it's just like the typical college kid.
Fast and the Furious muffler.
Yeah. No, it's just a regular, you know, car with. Anyway, I guess I went and grabbed some lunch or something because it was around lunchtime when it was over. And of course, you have this tremendous feeling of relief that that's just over, right? And they didn't tell you, at least for me, they didn't tell me whether I had been accepted in the program or not. It was just everybody shakes hands with you and you'd walk out. And then I think they must vote on it, or I don't know what they do. I don't know. So an hour or two goes by and the AVP calls me on my cell phone. He's like, congratulations, you are officially in the State Farm agency owner pool, which really doesn't mean anything that much, except for you now are, you know, you can now, you now qualify to own a State Farm agency, which you don't realize at that point is you are still like mile three of a marathon, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's lacing your shoes up at that point.
Exactly. You hadn't even really got to the starting line. I guess two hours goes by after that. Nationwide agency manager calls me and offers me a position in Huntsville, Alabama as a scratch agent with Nationwide Insurance, and I accept it. So I was in the State Farm agency owner pool for 2 hours.
How did that call go? The one back to State Farm?
I think I waited a day because I'm like, I can't call, you know, this guy's like so excited for me and I'm in his region and we're going to do great things together. And I'm so excited. How do you call that guy back 2 hours later and tell him to kick rocks? Right.
The Scott Howell I know would have called immediately.
No, I think I waited to the next day because I'm like, I can't do this today, you know, because you've been through all this. I mean, Pat just described it. You've been through all this stuff to get to there. You would never dream that a guy would call back and be like, hey, you know that State Farm agency owner pool thing you just told me I was in? Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Because you commit so much, right? And I think that's where it's so important to plan, right? You talk about this, like I do business analysis all day, right? Like that's really what we do at Beatonic on most days. We're looking at dashboards, we're looking at data, we're helping agencies to find gaps, to find ROI. We're going through all of those things. And that pre-planning process, it saves so much money. You know, at the end of the day, the part that I love Northwestern Mutual, right? I think that place gave me a big, big boost in my professional career. I have nothing but respect for State Farm. The State Farm, one of my favorite people in my town right now coaches my kids' basketball team. He's a State Farm agent. He's awesome at his job. And he literally wrote an auto and home bundle for my mother-in-law this weekend. Like, not kidding you, at a basketball game. So I love that side of the industry. It wasn't a good fit for me financially, but I always tell people I was better off than a lot of folks because I was able to go present data, present financials, and I didn't even have to make the phone call to say I'm not interested anymore. I was on a call and they said, okay, we understand that, but is this opportunity worth it to you? It's still worth it to you. And so I was able to say no. And I'm sure that was not great for management, but I think there's a level of adult, you know, conversations and respect that comes with somebody saying, this isn't going to work anymore. And so taking that step was a way was difficult. It significantly impacted our family. It definitely impacted kind of where I thought my career was going. But again, the training that I had there was incredible. I spent 9 months writing business plans, perfecting pitches, working with colleagues and things along those lines. And so it was a chance to get paid to get really good at running an agency and preparing an agency. So again, lots and lots of respect, lots and lots of respect for State Farm, lots and lots of respect for Northwestern Mutual. And, you know, certainly I try to tell people, you know, the mistakes I've made, I've tried to be upfront about that, that if I'm kind of on something and I'm being a little bit more of a prick about it, chances are I was the one that made that mistake before. And I don't want to see anybody else make it. It's an edge that I could probably work on a little bit, but I've always told people, you know, like, the Midwest is kind of like that spot where, you know, we will absolutely put our arm around you, but we're going to have a completely direct conversation with you as well. Right. So again, being prepared is important. And that's what I would say. If you're an agent in that flux or in that, what's the right move for me? Just don't be afraid to reach out to people. Don't be afraid to ask lots and lots of questions and, you know, lawyer up. You know, I think one thing, Bradley, you and I seem to connect on a lot is like the way you approach non-disclosure agreements, the way that you approach your willingness to go to bat, you know, either for your people or for your business. There's just not a lot of people that they just stay out of that front of it. So
yeah.
You know, a willingness to have those experts on your side on the front end is important, because I would say this, and I'll end it here, is it's a lot like getting recruited to play college sports, where everybody's your best friend. You're excited. You know, they're, hey, you moved in, you're good. Okay, meet me over at the gym. And then you're like, hey, what's up, coach? You know, and you're smiling and you're laughing. And he's like, get your ass on the line and start running. And you're like, okay. You know, like, I'm not getting recruited anymore. This is real. And in fairness to them, you have to be that way to be successful. You can't nonchalantly open an agency and expect to be successful. So again, a ton of respect for those groups. And I would say on a day-to-day basis, a conversation I have with independent agents are, they ask me about State Farm and the way their platform's set up. And they ask me about Goosehead Insurance and the way their platform's set up. And some of my favorite people in the industry work at State Farm, and some of my other favorite people in the industry work at Goosehead. And so being in and around those worlds, I try to really extract as much knowledge as I can from those groups. How are they winning? Where's the competitive advantage for IAs? And Seth and I have every week, Seth and I sit down, we spend 20, 30 minutes just talking about, you know, how can we bring those solutions to the independent channel? Because let's face it, outside of systems and training and things along those lines, you know, what there's questionable value that comes with that, right? Versus an IA, where I could listen to this podcast for the next 3 months, probably gather enough information to ask the right questions, probably meet a handful of the right people that could help me along my way. And I could probably make a pretty good decision on whether an IA, an independent agency, is right for me. So again, could keep going down that. I'll let you guys get asked questions on that. But my I keep coming back to it, guys, like, insurance and technology at the same time is the background that I have in these systems, these competitor systems. That's what my boss called me and asked me about on a daily basis. So value I can deliver, tell you guys all the mistakes I've made and where money's gone down the drain, and then I'll tell you what your competitors are doing. And I'm always happy to sit down and do that any time of the week that anybody wants to sit down with me.
You're one of these guys that you're sort of...
Well, hello there. Guys, excuse me for interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast, but I'm here today to get you out of aggregator and cluster jail. This may be the most important message I've ever delivered on the Insurance Guys podcast. Guys, are you a member of a cluster or an aggregator? Does your contract have exit fees, termination payments, buyback provisions? It's time to get your freedom back and do what we did here at iProtect Insurance. Join the AC, the future of aggregators in our industry. Best decision we've ever made, guys. Best decision we've ever made. No entry fees, small $200 a month membership fee, over 50 plus carriers for direct appointments. And by the way, new ones coming on board each and every month. You keep 100% of your commissions, profit sharing every year. Guys, we have made in the last 2 years, each year, our agency has made over $100,000 in profit sharing. Here's the best part, guys. And this is the part I'm the most passionate about. No termination or exit fees. You give the AC 60 days notice and you're free. You go get direct appointments wherever you want. There's no buyback provisions, no exit clauses. Guys, if you're a member of another aggregator, and you have termination fees, buyback provisions, exit clauses, every single policy you write, you're digging that hole just a little bit deeper. And one day you're not going to be able to get out of it. It's going to be too much. You're going to be taking out a second mortgage on your home to try to get out of a cluster group. Unbelievable. Guys, go to acfree.org. That's acfree.org and register. Find out why over 650 agencies and $3 billion in premium have chosen the AC. And guys, here's the best part. But wait, there's more. Mention the Insurance Guys podcast when you talk to these guys, and you get 6 months. That's 6 months of no membership fee just by mentioning the Insurance Guys podcast. Go today, www.acfree.org, and let me help you get your freedom back. Have a great day.
You have your hands in a lot of pots. You know, a lot of people tend to just focus on one area of the industry and put their fingers in their ears to everything else. But, you know, you've got the tech background, the non-insurance tech background, you've got the insure tech stuff, insurance agent, baseball. You know, we're in this, it's a question I'm dying to ask you. So we're in this kind of weird spot with insure tech. You know, 2018, 2019, we kind of had the bull rush where the money was super easy. It seemed like there was another insure tech popping up every single day that had just ridiculous funding, probably that a lot of them didn't deserve. You had the majority of those back then were anti-agent, and then you sort of had a shift 2020, 2021, where everybody started looking at agents, and then you sort of had an agent indie tech bull run of 2021, 2022, and then the economy started crapping out, and now the funding's really, I think maybe 6-8 months ago, the funding was basically dried up. And now it's sort of coming back a little bit. You're starting to see some companies raise money, but we're in this weird like spot where there's not many insure techs popping up. There are some that are. What's your sort of state of the union of where insure tech is today, and where do you see things going? I mean, certainly it's not going away, but I also hope that we don't have another just stupid money run in the next year and a half like we did back in 2018, 2019.
Hey, Pat, before you answer that, lest not forget, and I'll bring this up for the rest of my life, the 2012 McKinsey report, shout out to McKinsey report, wipe your ass with that, 2012 McKinsey report that stated InsurTech was going to do away with insurance agents. Insurance agents were not going to be a viable distribution platform much longer because of InsurTech. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's a good one. So I would tell you this, Bradley, they're not saying things out loud anymore. So we talked about, you know, InsurTech versus SoftBank backed InsurTech. I think a lot of people look at SoftBank backed InsurTech, the let's be super loud, let's do a lot of social, let's drive a lot of direct to consumer stuff online, and you know, that's how you do that, right? So you talked about it. I think when most of us probably started meeting each other, it was like, the hell with you guys. To Scott's point, it was like an evolution of the McKinsey report that was like, hey, it's direct, it's data driven, it's all these different things that agents can't keep up with. And it was right in your face, right? I mean, it was definitely something they'd smack you across the face and laugh at you about. Then we went through obviously the run where it was like, oh yeah, you can't just buy Facebook ads, you know, and all of a sudden sell insurance policies. And that really hit a lot of those groups. I mean, I'm not going to say the name of it, but literally one of the insure techs, the CEO of that company, his wife was in the business advertising sector at Facebook. So like, I mean, how could they have missed that? And they did. They just didn't have that ability to take a, you know, $5 investment in a Facebook ad and turn it into a $75 commission. It just, go figure, wasn't that easy. So I would tell you that, you know, we went through that phase when, hey, we're going to kill you. Then we got into that phase where I think it was like, hey, you know what? Agents are probably a decent distribution story. And I'm going to emphasize story, because there is a big difference between working with agents and working with agents. And I think what we saw was a lot of people went and got a second or a third round, right? A B or a C round of funding, saying, no, I got distribution figured out, Scott. It's all good. I'm going to go down to Mobile and I'm going to talk to Bradley. He's going to get 15 other agents that are going to get me 150 that are going to get me 1500, right? We don't mind doing 10X numbers because that's how we talk. Okay, that's great. But what they recognized then was, oh, wow, these agents actually have decades old relationships. I'm now carrier number 14 of 14. So now my distribution play isn't where I thought. And I think that's where money started to not be as easy to get. And so people said, you know what? What's the point? If money's hard to get, the industry's hard as hell. I think you saw a lot of folks exit. And I think, you know, one of our buddies kind of gave me a little bit of crap about saying that, you know, I was optimistic about where things were because the people that are still here, you know, want to be here. Well, that's part of it, but they feel like they've got something to prove. They've got a product of value. And so what I would tell you as agents, especially as it relates to agents, is all of that has led us to today where and I'm not downplaying, these guys are incredibly tech savvy. They come from a wild background, but there was an insurtech that I wouldn't necessarily call an insurtech. They're just a commercial insurance agency. Right. I think they raised something like $13 million. And that is not to change the way insurance is done. That is to sell an incredible amount of insurance and turn around and have, and I'm not saying I know their exit, but now you saw VC investing in platforms and in ideas. You're actually seeing insurtech turn into somewhat of like a mixed hybrid of the private mm-hmm. equity acquisition market
right.
that a lot of agents are actually familiar with. So what I would say is it's not even an insurtech conversation anymore. Insurtech is a conversation about when and where you can make more money. If it's not making you more money and somebody's telling you you're going to be behind in 5 years, I would question that. I have yet to see something that has just put agents behind 5 years because they didn't adopt it early. That seems like a stretch. So I think looking at the market and understanding, they're still competing like hell. I mean, InsurTech wants to put agents out of business still. They just aren't going to announce mm-hmm. it. They're not going to put it in front of our faces. But look at these funding rounds, man. They're going into what I would say are, you know, evolutions of what you're probably doing at Portal, evolutions of what Scott's doing at iProtect. And where I'll end with that is it's extremely expensive to become a direct-to-consumer insurtech. It isn't really that hard to become a direct-to-consumer insurance agent. And I will prove that to anybody. I'll drive to Mobile and prove it to you face-to-face, right? Like, that's how confident I am in that statement. And so without going too hard into swingers, you're so money you don't know it. let's be honest with ourselves right now. If I'm an insurance agent and I want to sell a direct renter's policy, I can do that. I can do that well. I can do it at a lower acquisition cost than an insurtech can. And so I think, you know, what can people lean on me in the industry for is, you know, you're going to get an honest feedback from me. I'm wrong. One thing I hope I do is admit when I'm wrong and try to make amends. I do hope my mom would expect me to do that. God love her, miss her to death. But I think that's something she raised me to look at, right? I'll apologize. I'll try to make things right. But, you know, at the end of the day, if I could emphasize anything, man, it's like reach out and have conversations about what you could actually do. And I've said it, I think we're coming into a golden era of insurtech, mm-hmm. But nobody wants to admit it because they're not going to raise $50 million. They're not going to, you know, exit at a 40%, you know, 40X multiple on it. We're in a golden age because there's people with awesome small businesses out there. We've kind of sifted through the products that make sense. We've got more data than we ever had. Thank you, Seth Zaremba and Shots Cole and Anna Schaefer and Michael Tepker and everybody else that's been a part of the Atomic. But yeah, we're in a really unique spot. Don't underestimate the capital and don't underestimate your ability to plug in solutions. That would be what I would say. And that's easy. I'm in that side of the business. So of course, I'll say that, but I'll show you some math. How about that? I'll make those claims. I'll back it up with math. And if you don't agree with that math, I'll still buy you a beer or a cup of coffee, you know, next time I see you. Yeah, we could still all be friends. And you fly into O'Hare, I'll tell you exactly where to go get a burger. You know, that's how I lead things with folks.
Well, it's funny. So much of the fundraising stuff is so driven by ego.
It's every part of it.
We raise $50 million. That means we're successful. You're purging money every single month. Like, show me the guy or the gal that built a company bootstrap. Yeah, maybe they take some friends and family money and that sort of thing, grew slow. You know, somebody asked me the other day, like, what's your goal for Portal? And I said, to grow it, to get as big as we possibly can, responsibly as we possibly can.
Great.
It's very easy to get very big, very fast, irresponsibly, but you're putting so much risk out there. And, you know, it's funny. I was going back and forth. I told this story at the One City World Tour last year. It was my opening sort of rah-rah speech, but I DM'd the CEO of a direct-to-consumer insurance carrier about a year and a half ago. And I was like, hey, man, let me know when you guys are ready to start selling through agents. I can help you with distribution and reaching those agents. And his response was like, we will never do that. And I was like, okay, you know, so we kind of went back and forth. And I'll tell you what, I can tell you exactly what he said because it was pretty profound. And there eventually, I can't wait when they start selling through agents and I can throw this back up. He said, it's just a different way of looking at it. We get a lot of benefits from being able to have a direct relationship with our customer, lower loss ratio, higher retention, higher satisfaction. It's also better financially for us because being an agent is the best part of the value chain in insurance. Being a carrier isn't that great. And I was like, that's such a subtle but big difference. Like, they're thinking of themselves as a direct-to-consumer agency, not a direct-to-consumer carrier. And I was like, these guys don't want to beat us. They want to be us.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting in the best spot you can possibly sit in. And not to mention, it's a huge disadvantage when you go to direct-to-consumer, whether you're an agency or a carrier, and you've got one product versus having multiple. And so I think we're going to start seeing more, like you mentioned earlier, with the commercial agency. I think we're going to start seeing more, hey, we're a direct-to-consumer agency, things like Gabby, mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, we're positioning ourselves as a tech company, but really we're an agency. And that's really all we are. We've just got a ton of money and a ton of distribution and that sort of thing. But if you look at, like, I posted on LinkedIn and Twitter the other day, if you look at Lemonade, so Lemonade likes to say, and all the direct-to-consumer carriers like to say, we don't pay the agent the 15%, therefore we can pass that saying.
Oh my God. If I hear that one more.
Well, wait.
I'm going to put sports in my ears if I have to hear that one more time.
So Lemonade, I'll actually read you exactly what I posted. In 2023, Lemonade grew its customer base by 219,370 customers. The average premium, their average, and these are their actual numbers. Their Q4 results were released last week. Their average premium per customer is $369. So that's $80,947,530 in premium, $80 million. Last year, they spent $102 million on advertising, which was a 26% decrease of 2022. So they spent $130 million. So you're telling me paying 15% of $80 million, which is $12 million. Now, I know it doesn't work out exactly that way. You're still going to spend some money on marketing. Sure. But I'm like, wait a minute. You're not saving the 15%. In fact, you're paying way more than that to acquire that customer. It really, if you're working with agents, your only costs are the cost that it takes to manage and contact those agents. You know, what you pay the reps, that sort of thing, which you can solve very easily by working with an MGA. Like, I look at some of these carriers that I think it's a really smart play if you're a carrier and you want to start working with agents. Hey, let's form an MGA agreement first.
Right.
Let's let the MGA handle all of the sort of the back and forth with the agents, the appointment process, and you don't have to have that infrastructure to do that. Like similar to how I think Hippo did it with Agentero. Originally, for a few years, the only way you could get Hippo was directly through Agentero. So
I'm going to climb on my soapbox for a second.
Get after
if it. If I'm not mistaken, in that whole Lemonade Twitter battle that was being had, did they or did they not say that they have an 88% retention ratio? Is that what the number they gave? 88%?
I don't think it's that high.
That guy right there that you were just talking about mentioned 88%. I know that. I thought he said 88%. Let me say something to this, okay? Bradley Flowers and I had the CFO of HealthSouth, who at one time was one of the largest companies in America.
They posted a net loss in just the fourth quarter of 2023, a net loss of $42 million.
Great.
Continue.
He went to jail. The HealthSouth CFO went to jail. And on this podcast, live, in person, he looks at Bradley Flowers and I, and he goes, guys, you cannot imagine in your lifetime how stressful and what you will and won't do when you have to meet Wall Street
mm-hmm.
expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe a damn number that any of these carriers put out if they're a stock company, because you're fighting to stay alive, and the last thing you want when your earnings report comes out is MSNBC and Cramer and all these other people talking about, you know, oh my God, but you're going to tell me that a direct-to-consumer, when Scott Howell literally knows practically every one of his 3,000 clients,
mm-hmm.
can have a better, as good or better retention ratio than I can? Are you insane?
So there,
you don't know any of your clients. There is no reason for them to stay. When you raise your rate 26%, they're gone.
So their gross loss ratio was 77%. This is funny. It says it improved 1,200 basis points years over year. They're trying to make it sound really, really, really fancy. And like it's 1,200, it's a big number. I think it means 12%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm an idiot and I'm from Alabama, but
if you look at the report, and obviously this is an investment advice furthest thing from it, but if you look at actually what Daniel wrote, they're going to increase spending now. The number that they were excited about driving down is now going up. And the simple reality is he's counting on headwinds, right? He said, we're hoping that we found our wind that will catch our sails. And the simple reality of just what they're going through right now is, had they not gone the way they did, we'd all sit back and say, yeah, I mean, if they were an insurance agency that was trying to get big and grow, you'd almost respect it. You'd almost respect the grind. Their trajectory, that 7 to 10 years, they're kind of slowly but surely getting to that point. It's the complete and utter pushback and the need for the insurance, the legacy side of the insurance industry, to be wrong in order for Lemonade to be right. And I would say that is a broader tone. That's a broader tone that we see in both the spaces that we all operate in as well. I really think that, and I said this earlier on Twitter earlier in the year, I said, you know, a big red flag for an insurtech is that they just dog their competitor. Yeah. If you need your competitor to be wrong for you to be right, you're not actually innovating anything. And my look and my challenge to the people I work with is, let's build superior products this year. Let's build things that people don't have. Let's not make an incremental increase to something that exists, right? And so I think the lull that we saw obviously was financial. Fundraising is a big part of innovation. But I mean, how much creativity was really out there during that time? Yeah. That's where I say the folks that are in it now, they've got something. They've got an agenda. They've come across something that makes them want to be here right now in the moment. And so, yeah, it's a wild environment to watch the way those guys do things. And what I would just say is that the pushback from the independent channel is exactly what you would want from a risk management person, right? Yeah. Hey, if that was the best paper that was out there, I'd put you on that in a heartbeat. There's concerns about it, and I can put you into a better product right now, and that's what I'm going to do. And I think Scott hit it. Like, I don't, as a consumer, I literally don't care if Lemonade saves 12% or 15% on commission. I don't care about anything like that. What I want to know is that when my toilet, which literally happened, overflows, I want to know that a human being is going to pick up the phone and is going to talk me through this process. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon. So.
Well, it's to me the worst, lowest form of marketing that I hate the most. And there's a few agent tech companies that do this, that every single time they open their freaking mouth, they have to throw shade at somebody, whether it's subtle or whether it's like Lemonade does. To me, that screams little brother.
Mm-hmm.
It screams, I'm actually worried about these people, therefore I have to throw shade at them every single time. And we've seen this, you know, it was a company a few years ago that came out and decided to throw shade at the two or three competitors they had. Well, guess what you just did? You just pigeonholed yourself, because these are the only two or three people that are going to buy you. You just hurt yourself in an exit situation. Or at best, let's say they get over it and they end up do buying you. Then what's that look like to all your people?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, you should be showing the value in your product, not why your competition's bad. And by the way, I'm okay. I'm all about some well-timed shade. I think it has its place in marketing and branding and online rhetoric and that sort of thing. But when every single time you say something, every single time you press post, you're throwing shade at something or somebody, it's not a good look. It's not a good look at all.
I think of this story. So when I was in high school, one of my really good buddies was a rodeo guy, and not a sports guy. And we went to the store or something. We were all walking out of the store, and I had on my uniform. My buddy had his uniform on, and my other buddy was just in his Wranglers and his cowboy hat. And these like goth kids come walking towards us, and one of them goes, "I hate sports." And my buddy, the rodeo guy, goes, "So do I." And I think of that story every time somebody talks to me about, like, Salesforce is a great example, right? When people are like, and they go at it really hard because they think I'm a Salesforce evangelist. And I always think back to that story of walking out of the store and like, hey, I hate it. Be like, I hate it too, you know, but it's awesome. Like, if there's anybody in the world that wants to find the gaps in that thing, it's going to be me, right? And so I would just tell people that I don't think that that adversarial approach is healthy. And regardless of anything else, whether you want to, your ego, whatever it is, you can't do it. All right. I have to work with AMSs. I have to work with other CRMs. I literally have to work with carrier partners. I have to work with other people that if you throw shade at me, I have to be in a room with you in 3 weeks and you've thrown shade at me. Can we all agree that's not a healthy environment to be in? And if the answer is that, like, yes to that, okay, like that's, I'll leave you with that. That is where we should be looking at the industry. Yeah. And we should be pushing InsurTech folks like me. You see me out there dogging somebody, remind me that I'm probably going to have to help you connect to that person in Q4 of this year.
Right.
And so it's all interconnected. We're all working together. And I'm with you. I like the shade in the appropriate spots. I love the edgy conversations that we can have. I hope that at the end of the day, what comes out of it is really what Scott hit on earlier. And that's, you all know me for 7 years. I mean, if you don't, you know my boss, Seth. And if Seth loves me, isn't that damn near enough
to at least
give me a shot, right? And so, I'll leave you. I want to be a resource for the industry, guys. That's really where it all comes down to. And any conversation we've had today probably could be surmised with that, you know, just kind of one bullet point.
Well, it's funny. I told somebody the other day, LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, when you go to let's say a company offsite, right? Or a conference. Okay. You get there in the morning, they've got the little silver coffee pot there for you to get your coffee. The CEO's there, his suit's all crisp. And, you know, the conversation is very, very professional and everybody's on their best behavior. And then you go through the day and then that night, everybody meets up at like a pub or a bar or a restaurant. And it's a little bit more loose. There's a lot more crap talking and that sort of thing. Business still gets done in both. That's how I think of the social platforms. So like Twitter is the morning coffee, Facebook, Instagram are lunchtime. Everybody's getting a little loose. Twitter is the bar.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah.
And you know, people will come, I'll say stuff on Twitter. And the lemonade thing last week, for you, those of you listening, I went at lemonade pretty hard last week. Somebody asked me yesterday, they said, what was that all about? I said, to be completely honest with you, I'm like this close to getting monetized on Twitter and I have to get so much engagement. And I was like, who's the feistiest crowd? Oh yeah, let's go at limit. I mean, everything I said was true, I believe, but it's like that, you know, but I've tweeted stuff before that's sort of snarky or what have you. Like, I don't know, like then this isn't a real thing, but let's just say like I say, oh, the coffee in New Orleans sucks, right? Which I do think it sucks. And that chicory and all that, that's not any good. Anyway. And then I'm at an event in New Orleans. Somebody's like, well, I know you're not going to drink the coffee. And I'm like, no, I'm going to drink it. Like people will see things that people tweet online and be like, that's the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's totally true. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Pat, the Twitter voice. You know, everybody that's active on Twitter has a Twitter voice. That person's a little bit different than the person you're going to meet online.
Right.
If it's not, we've got problems, you know. but you know, you and I got into a little spat a couple years ago. I was totally in the wrong. And I want to apologize to you right here in front of God and country for getting a little feisty in a situation that I should not have been feisty. But it happens to everybody. At some point, somebody's gotten to some sort of kerfuffle with somebody online. And once you come out of it, you're like, wait a minute, I was actually being the dick. You know what I mean?
I wasn't on Twitter then, so I don't know.
Well, what happened? About. I came into the tail end of a conversation.
That's your first mistake.
With two people and started replying. And then once I clicked back, I was like, oh, wait a minute. The person whose side I was on was actually the one that started this and did it in a bad, really bad way. Mm. I often joke that there should be a connection between my Apple Watch and my phone that if my blood pressure is so high, that my social apps don't work.
Right.
Because it's always when you're already having a bad day that you see something that pisses you off, you know. But anyway, Pat, I want to apologize for that. And I know we've chatted many times since then and it's all good.
I would just tell you this, I don't know what to say because that was impactful. But what I would tell you is, and maybe this is, I love that story. I looked internally at what I said too, you know, and what actually kicked off that entire conversation. And, you know, I think people would be surprised how much we all actually do talk to each other behind the scenes. And I think you said it, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. But yeah, it's, I think to Scott Band of Brothers point, you know, I mean, the three of us were in that conversation. And I'll tell you right now, somebody goes at either of you two in the next hour on Twitter, man, I'm dropping what I'm doing. I'm defending you.
Let's ride.
And you know what? I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Especially a 22-year-old college student from Belmont University that wants to jump on that.
when somebody does go at me on Twitter, you always know you have those two or three people that are going to side with you. And I always know in the back of my head, you're one of those.
I mean, that means a lot to me, man. And you know, I will say this. I sent you a shirt, what, 2-3 years ago? And said battle on it. I said battle. It said battle on it. I sent that to you on purpose, and it's so awesome that you brought that up. I literally sent that to you because of the situation that you're talking about, to let you know that I'm one of your dogs. Like, I'm a dog, dude. Like, I actually love you more because we are in a spat that we go back and forth. To me, the battle is important, and I love that. I love the guys, because if we can't be honest and direct with each other, you know, then what are we really doing? And so I love the battles that we have online. And I love the ring, you know, I love the people that are jumping in and regulating it too. You know, we've got people that'll say, hey, this or that, but I would just say, thank you for that, one, first and foremost, but two, it's a great glimpse into the reality of InsurTech and in the IA channel that, a lot of us are talking behind the scenes. You know, a lot of us are, if you're not hearing what you want to hear, or you're confused, or something doesn't sound right, you know, reach out to those people, because there isn't really this huge amount of people doing this anymore. It's a pretty condensed group, and we rely on each other. We respect each other and things along those lines. And no, I mean, listening to this podcast, I've said it before. I mean, if you'd only do one thing, you could probably listen to this podcast and you could probably open an insurance agency and do it effectively and efficiently. But I would say that the number one thing you'd walk away from is a group of people that you can count on. Yeah, I don't know. You know, Seth's a big hugger. Scott, big hugger. It's I don't know. It seems like a lot of those guys are like that. You know, a lot of the ladies, the men in this industry, it's like we count on each other. So, again, my Twitter tone aside, because it is the only place I do really go online at, reach out, have conversations with people. We're in a really cool spot right now. You're not going anywhere. You're not going to die, but you're probably leaving a lot of money on the table. So if you want to find more money, I got to believe I'm one of the guys that's worth having a half hour conversation with.
We could podcast all day.
100%. So, hey, before I shut this thing down, let me ask you a question, Pat. Talk to these agents. Give us 3-4 minutes talking about Be Atomic, what you guys are doing. I kind of wet their appetite a little bit when I was introducing you, talking about what you guys are doing with the secret shopper stuff. Talk a little bit about Be Atomic. Give these agents something to at least think about relative to what you guys are doing right now in the industry.
I appreciate that opportunity. So yeah. at Be Atomic, we have tiers. That's how we talk about our products, and we're super creative with it. So tier zero means you need zero neon products, neon infrastructure to do anything, right? And that's neon shopping alerts. And I tell you what, since you guys did the podcast with Seth, I've had the best conversations of my career with insurance agents. Not all of them signed up, and haven't heard from some of them that I'm sure are still planning. And I would just tell you the conversations we had were truly awesome. So thank you guys for putting that out there, letting people know about it. But what we're doing now, same thing we were doing before. We monitor 55,000 plus insurance shopping websites. So somebody goes to State Farm, they go to Progressive, and they're in your book of business, and we're monitoring them. Our algorithm will flag it, and I'll send you an email in the morning that says, you know, Scott's shopping for insurance, looking for home insurance, and he did it yesterday. You know, I can tell you what time of the day it was. And from there, you know, most of the time the agents are reaching out and just saying, you know, I make the joke, it's like the discount double check. Like, hey, it's Jake from State Farm. You know, you're not calling them and saying, hey, Bradley, I got this thing that tells me you're on statefarm.com last night. You know, what the hell is your problem? You're calling them up, and it's basically like, hey, this is the time of the year. You probably ask some questions about your policies. Right. You have a couple of minutes to go through that, right? So that's really that initial reach out. But what I found in really surprised me, not really surprised me, but was awesome about it is it's not just a retention tool. at the very baseline, I'm going to send you a list of people every morning that you have alerts and say, hey, cross-reference your AMS. If this is somebody you probably should reach out to, great. Give them a call and you're in business, right? That's kind of the day-to-day of it. But what's actually cool is all these upsells, these cross-sell opportunities mm-hmm. that are coming up. Like, yeah, I'm adding a driver. Oh, why? Oh, my 16-year-old. What does your life insurance look like? What does your umbrella look like? Medicare alerts are insane. I mean, we see insane amount of Medicare alerts that come through, and whether that's something you do internally or you farm out to, a group like Divi, they do similar, like I think Back9, those kind of mm-hmm. groups. You can farm those out to those folks. They're professional. They take care of for you. You make money. That was really unique. So it's not just a retention. It's actually I'm having better conversations with policyholders. I'm finding gaps in their coverage and I'm selling more. Our life insurance one is locked in. That one is really, really good. And it's doing a great job at predicting who's in the market for life. And we don't take ages. So it's not guessing like, oh, Bradley's in that perfect buying moment with kid, a kid and a kid on the way. It's purely on activity.
Well, what I want to do, and I haven't done this yet, is I want to go to like Cole X dates and pull a list of like 2000 X dates and send those to you guys. And then I'm just calling the people that are interested.
Right.
You're like, hey, we're a local agent. I mean, you don't even have to tell them how you got your information. Well, actually, I was shopping online last night, you know?
Right.
One of your listeners came through pipeline, signed up probably 6 months ago, 7 months ago. And this month is their first month. They put 700, I think, call them leads, 700 leads into it with that exact idea of like, if I call these people all day, every day, it's going to cost me $1 million. But if I get an alert that says they were in market, it's worth my time to call that person and check on them. Right. And so, It's awesome. And the data, we just released all the dashboards. If you're an alerts customer, you get alerts, dashboards, and data as part of your existing plan. And the last thing, and this was a big announcement, but it was a huge change. If you're an agent that came on the platform and expressed this, or you were somebody that was holding off because you were concerned about it, we have a monthly payment option now. So you can, it's a 12-month program. We monitor the household for 12 months. 365 24/7 for $2 a household. We used to take payment all up front, right? Now we'll actually divide that by 12. Little bit of a charge that we just pass on the monthly merchant account fee that we have, the processing fee. But we allow you to pay monthly on that front. And what I would say, guys, is what you're going to see VCs talking about more and more is the flywheel approach to development of a company. And the idea is that you basically bring in a customer at a certain point, and then your business grows as that customer grows, and you introduce them to the different tiers of products you have. At Neon, at Viatomic, what we do is we have a data analytics platform. It's agnostic to AMSs. And what it allows you to do is you can run book of business reports. You can run loss reports. We have about 6 reports we run in HawkSoft right now. We actually can ingest those if you send them to us, or we'll actually have a VA go out and grab those. But that allows you to visualize your data. And it allows you to benchmark that data against your peers inside of the insurance industry. That $99.99 a month, $100 a month as well. You can pay monthly for that as well. So tier 0 and tier 1, for call it a couple $100 a month, I can tell you the customers that are in market, the potential that they, people you need to get in front of. We can create data that's going to say, hey, Bradley, Wednesday and Thursday are probably during lunchtime or probably the busiest times that your customers are online shopping. So make Monday and Tuesday big marketing days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, big follow-up days, right? You can actually plan at an agency level based on the data we're providing there. And now all of a sudden I can look at your book of business and I can say, hey, Bradley, how much does it cost you to do a change of driver, right? The industry average right now is somewhere like in the 18 to 20s, like mid 20s to change it, add, remove driver, right? Neon Service Center, what we're able to do, because we know the data, we know how much these folks cost at the agency, we can actually press a button that says, you know what, a VA through Neon Service Center can do this for $6.50 against the $17 or $25 that I'm doing. And so what I've done is I've gone from a zero technology implementation at tier 0. You don't need to buy anything. I'll just tell you when your customers are in market. Let's visualize your book of business. Let's show you how you stack up against your peers and let's find some ROI that's in it. That's the difference between Viatomic. And I always make the joke, that meme that says like, it's probably inappropriate. I think one guy says like, You know, you get high to go out to the club. I get high to clean the dishes. I'm in Illinois, weed's legal, so I'm learning all the jokes. I'm getting all the new jokes out there. But I say that, you know, when I recommend a software platform, I've been talking to you for probably 90, 120 days. I've got the guts of your agency right in front of me. I'm probably talking to Kerry Wallace because chances are you're working with her. I mean, unbelievable stud of the industry. Right. Now I'm having a conversation about platform. I'm having a conversation about, you know, we don't talk as Salesforce expensive at the end of the day because that's part of a broader math equation that is either going to say Scott and Bradley are making a hell of a lot more money, their people are happier, and their customers are getting taken care of, or we're not doing this. And so I would tell you, you know, bad jokes aside, maybe inappropriate joke aside, that is the difference that I see with us, is that if you're coming into that CRM tool, hell, man, I know your customer's online shopping behavior. I got a pretty damn good idea about who should be working at your agency, who shouldn't, and I definitely know who shouldn't be touching which spots in your agency. And at that point, that's where I start to say, look, you know, if you need a million API calls, you know, now we're starting to say, okay, that's why Salesforce is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. You're not driving to the street corner to get milk. You have a multi-million dollar small business with people's livelihoods counting on that. And this is the platform that's going to keep me in business today and is going to allow me to grow every day from here on out. And so shout out to the people that have been a part of the Atomic. I know people have come through the company, some awesome, talented people. I will tell you both this. The amount of talent that's come through the Atomic is incredible. And I only lean on my sports background for very few scenarios. But what I would tell you is that we've been so fortunate because of the talented people that we've had. And as we continue to grow, I would say you can't keep people forever. And especially when you have all-stars, when you have people that are just crushing it. And so I don't want to name names. That's, you know, I didn't get permission, but, you know, the people that hired me at the Atomic, you know who you are. Thank you. And those people are killing it. They are in high profile positions now. To the other people that work behind the scenes, the data folks, all that. Thank you. You know, I get to sit here and talk about the things I do because of that, because Bradley Flowers and Ryan Pessel both send me a text message and say, hey, figure out how we can get these shopping alerts like our competitors have. Right. Those types of things are only possible because of a lot of names that won't show up on the existing roster. But again, super talented people that I want to make sure I thank. And with that, thank you, Shots, Cole. Thank you, Anna Schaefer. Thank you, Michael Tepker. Thank you, Seth Zaremba and his wife and his family for everything you do. I think we all know that dude's a living legend.
He's a beast.
And the people people I have around me, I appreciate the hell out of you. So thank you for letting me do that, guys. I always need to do those shout outs because the team I work with, they mean a lot to me.
Hey, Pat, these agents listening right now, if they want to get in touch with you or be Atomic to find out more about how they can get started with some of the stuff that you guys are doing, where do they go? What do they need to do?
Yeah, if you send me an email, pat@theatomic.com, I'm always available. I'll hop on a Zoom with you at any point. So that's my email, pat@theatomic. You can go to theatomic.com/insuranceguys. And you can actually sign up for alerts through that. And like I said, we'll have some special things if you shout those guys out or you buy, you know, you mention these guys, we'll do some cool stuff for you. It gets you a little more extra data in there. But yeah, that's the way to go.
Guys, I'm going to go ahead and shut this thing down. As I end every episode, rewards come from action, not discussion. Get your ass out from behind that desk today. Stop doing TPS reports. Stop shuffling papers around on your desk or figuring out what your scorecard bonus is or how much you think you're going to make in contingency bonuses, and go out and build relationships, not only in your community, which in my opinion is the most important thing you can do to be successful, is to build relationships and become the mayor of the town or the city that you live in. The more people you meet, there's one thing I've always said, guys, that will always hold true as an independent or captive insurance agent. The more people you know, the more people that you build relationships with in your community, people, assuming everything's equal, people want to do business with people they know, like, and trust. That is period, end of sentence, full stop. So go do that today. But not only that, and we talked a lot about that today on this podcast in a kind of a roundabout way, Go network with the people in this industry. The worst possible thing you can do is stick your head in the sand and be in your little office somewhere in the Midwest or in North Carolina, South Carolina, Nevada, and not build relationships with people like Bradley Flowers, Pat West, Seth Zaremba. I could go on and on and on and on with the great people in this industry. The worst thing you could do is not do that. Go find a mastermind to join. Go get involved with a lot of these other things you can do online. Build relationships in your community. Build relationships within the industry with people who can help you. I probably ask Bradley and the group that I'm on a Facebook group with once a week a question about, hey, how can I get appointed with this carrier? How can I do? I did it yesterday. Hey, I need to get appointed with somebody that does a jewelry only policy. 3 seconds later, Bradley's like, oh, dude, go sign up for this. Perfect. It's exactly what you need. That will help you so much. Go make money for your family, for your wife, for your kids' college fund, for your parents and in-laws like mine that are struggling out there today. My in-laws can barely make their grocery budget every month. I have to help them with that sometimes in ways that they don't know because they've got too much pride to ask me. And I'm not even going to get into what I'm doing right now that if I told y'all about, you'd be like, God, Scott has lost his complete and ever-loving mind. I'm too embarrassed to tell Bradley Flowers. This is how bad it is. I'm too embarrassed to tell Bradley about it because he is going to tell me that I have completely lost my mind. Was something,
if I promise not to do that, will you tell me?
That's something that I'm helping one of my agents out with right now.
I got you.
But it's a lot. But I love each and every one of you. Go write good business for the agencies that you represent. Go write good business for the companies that you are partner. And I shouldn't say partners. As Brian Hanley said yesterday, suppliers. Go write good business for your suppliers, your carriers, suppliers, because they're not really partners. Bradley Flowers, I love you.
Love you too, man. Thanks, Pat.
Pat, we love you.
I love you guys, man. Great show. Thanks for having me.
Guys, you are listening to the Insurance Guys podcast, and we love each and every one of you. Thank you so much for being a part of our family. We'll see you back here real soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Insurance Guys podcast. If you need to know more about me or you need to get in touch with Scott, you can always reach me at theinsuranceguyonline.com or email me at scott@iprotectinsurance.com. And if you need to get in touch with Mr. Bradley Flowers, go to portalinsurance.com or email him at bradley@portalinsurance.com. Guys, we love you. Thank you so much for listening to our show and being a part of our family. And we look forward to seeing you again next week on the next episode of the Insurance Guys podcast. Take care.